The Tom Woods Show, episode 824.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
To all my young listeners, you want to stand out from your peers? Then don't do what they do. Join Praxis, get real on-the-job experience, and a real job. Be entrepreneurial. Get all the details at tomwoods.com/praxis. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here, talking about Obamacare today. It's back in the news. A lot of people are arguing very passionately about it because they're fearful that it will be repealed, and this will have terrible consequences for everybody. That's the story. Well, what's the real truth? Joining us is our old friend, Bob Murphy, who co-hosts the Contra Krugman podcast with me at ContraKrugman.com. You can follow Bob over at ConsultingByRPM.com. RPM are Bob's initials. ConsultingByRPM.com is where you can find Bob's blog and all his fun stuff over there. He's the author of many books, as you know. The one that is most relevant to today's topic is his co-authored book, The Primal Prescription, which is just an outstanding book from a libertarian perspective on health care. But Bob has just written so many things, it's hard to keep track of them all at this point. He holds a PhD in economics from New York University, and I'm very glad to welcome him back to the show. Bob, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Always glad to have you on the show. We're talking about Obamacare again, and it's in the news because, of course, we have a new president coming in, and he's talked about repealing and replacing Obamacare. So people are talking about it, and progressives are saying, and these are the same progressives who were disappointed with Obamacare because it didn't go far enough, are saying, we can't get rid of it. It's done so much good. And a lot of these Trump supporters who were working class people are the ones who are going to suffer the most from the repeal of Obamacare. So it's like they have false consciousness in supporting a guy who wants to take their health care away from them. What is the matter with these people? That's been the narrative we've heard an awful lot in the media. And then there was this article.
Well, can we just stop on that for a minute, Tom?
Yeah, let's do that.
What's funny, I mean, so they kind of have the cognitive dissonance there. I mean, they know full well they can't be claiming, oh, Trump told you he was going to expand the ACA, but actually he's a liar. You can't trust one thing out of that guy. I mean, they know full well Trump won the election, you know, among other things, by saying we're going to get rid of this awful healthcare thing that Obama gave you. So, you know, they can say now Trump wasn't specific about what he's going to replace it with. And so it's just pie in the sky promises. But even the critics of Trump cannot possibly claim that the people who voted for him didn't know that he was going to try to get rid of Obamacare.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't an area that he was particularly shy about. If you were to narrow down to five things that he emphasized, this would be one of them. Well, I wanted to have you on because somebody brought to my attention an article that appeared in the LA Times. This is from January 4th, 2017. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/824 if anybody wants to follow along. It's written by looks like Michael Hiltzik. And if you follow Contra Krugman, maybe you'll get this joke that I'm wondering if it's actually pronounced suave. But all the same, this column is called Republicans Call Obamacare a Failure. These seven charts show they couldn't be more wrong. And our point today is not going to be that the seven charts are all nothing but lies and they're just misleading numbers. It's rather, what should we think about these charts? What is the correct lesson to take away from the various charts? So the first of the charts, and again, if you're at a computer or on your phone, it might be nice if you looked at them with us, but
can I stop you for 1 second?
Yeah. You can stop me anytime you want.
Yeah. Because here I'm the guest. When I'm the co-host on the other podcast, you can just walk all over me. But here you got to have some courtesy. That's partly why I jumped in a minute ago is because, you know, this guy's narrative, he quotes Mike Pence, who said, this law has failed. Americans are struggling. The law is failing while we speak. Things are only getting worse under Obamacare. The healthcare system has been ruined, dismantled under Obamacare. And now this guy, Michael Suave, also known as Hiltzik, says every one of those statements is demonstrably untrue. And so it's like, wait a minute, why are all these people voting for the guy who said he's going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act if it's such a smashing success? You know, no, so in other words, one way of demonstrating that, no, it is failing is the public got really riled up by a guy who said, this thing is terrible, vote for me and I'll get rid of it. And he won the election. Now, so you can, you know, we can quibble about, oh, the majority or what have you. But still, it's, I'm saying that's prima facie evidence that what Pence was saying was correct.
Now let's look at chart number one, which is the uninsured rate has fallen dramatically under Obamacare. And the decline in uninsured rates was especially pronounced under among lower-income Americans, according to the Council of Economic Advisers and other sources. So I don't know if that counts as two charts, because they're both dealing with the decline in the uninsured. But what do you say to that? I mean, nobody really denies that. Like, that's the whole point of the thing, so we would expect that thing to happen.
Right. And so, I mean, one analogy we could use here is to say, look, if the federal government's going to throw billions of dollars at higher education, would we say, is it a success or not? Well, let's see. Are more Americans getting diplomas from colleges who otherwise would not have? And yeah, the answer presumably is yes. If the government's going to throw billions of dollars at something, they can move certain metrics. And the question is just, is that a good thing or not? Right. So we hear, I think what happened is, the rollout of Obamacare was botched so badly that for a while there, the critics were saying, oh my gosh, they might not even be able to get this thing to work. And, you know what I mean? So their expectations were so low for a while. They were waiting to see, can they even get people to sign up and take this money and go ahead and buy this stuff that now the law is mandating companies have to sell them. And then of course, you know, after a while the kinks were worked out, and yes, the official, the insurance rate has gone up, or the number percentage of uninsured has gone down. But you're right, Tom. I mean, it's sort of like saying, if the government's going to have school lunches, can the number of school lunches delivered go up or not? And then we're going to use that to see, is this thing working? And so, you know, in those other contexts, you could see, yeah, that's really not the issue if you're going to be an opponent of such a thing. It's just with Obamacare, it was so bad when they first rolled it out and the website didn't even work, that I think the critics, you know, got excited and perhaps overstepped and made wild claims about, you know, I don't even know if they're going to be able to sign people up for this thing.
I don't want to get into what they would replace Obamacare with, because that really is an entirely different episode. And I've done a lot of episodes on healthcare since starting the show. So let's leave that to one side. But on the other hand, I do want to raise right here at the beginning this basic objection to our point of view, which would be, the fact is, the number of uninsured has come way down under Obamacare. And yes, it's true, there are other problems and premiums are higher and this and that. But the fact is this, even if you libertarians say that a purely free market in healthcare would lead to much reduced prices, that's not what we would have if we got rid of Obamacare. We would go right back to the old system where people are paying $2,000 to get a cast on their arm. It's just totally insane. That's the reality. The reality is that these people who are insured now who weren't before would go back to being uninsured, very vulnerable, and you people have no real solution for them.
That is a difficult question, but they sort of load the deck by telling us what is and is not politically feasible. Okay, so it's not libertarians' fault that the Affordable Care Act got passed, but it's also not our fault that, you know, Ronald Reagan signed legislation that made hospitals have to treat anybody who showed up. It's not our fault that the tax code makes it advantageous for employers to, you know, bundle health insurance premiums in with your compensation package. So now if you lose your job, you lose your health insurance. It's not our fault that there's the FDA and the American Medical Association in conjunction with licensing boards that heavily restricts the amount of doctors that can go in the field, and that's what makes health care so expensive. So that's one thing here. People in this discussion often use health care and health insurance interchangeably, and no, those are distinct things. The reason it's so critical for people to have health insurance is because health care is so expensive, right? If you look at stuff like getting laser eye surgery or something in the mall now, they've got an outpatient status, or just getting elective cosmetic surgery that's not going to be covered and you're just paying cash out of pocket. The cost for those procedures and the quality behave like they do in any other normal consumer market, where the things get cheaper over time and the quality gets better. And there's nothing weird about healthcare in that realm. And that's because that's a normal market transaction where you're a patient and a customer and you pay money for something if you think it's worth it. And that's how it works. And so it gets better over time. But yet that doesn't seem to work in healthcare. And the reason's not because of stuff libertarians have been doing. So, I mean, if I make, again, analogies here, if the government all of a sudden starts taxing rich people and giving the money to people who are convicted of nonviolent drug offenses, you know, how's a libertarian supposed to deal with that? Well, I mean, the correct thing is, no, that's wrong. You don't just take from these people here to give to these people over here, even if they have been victimized by the system. The correct thing is to stop those transfers that are coercive and end the drug war. And that will really fix things. And so, you know, right now, yeah, it can come off as, oh, we're heartless and we don't care about these, especially people of modest means who couldn't get health insurance before. But you're not doing them any favors by letting Washington start this new program. So I think that's part of the issue. I don't know if now's the time to segue into
the cruise. Sorry.
Talking about, you know, are people really satisfied with this and is it good? Yeah. So people right now officially have coverage. More people have it. But, you know, there's the problem with this stuff is there's lots of different competing claims. So you'll see some surveys saying, oh, everyone loves their coverage and they're very satisfied. And that by itself wouldn't be so surprising because people who literally had no coverage before now getting it, you know, they would say, oh, that's better than nothing. But on the other hand, I mean, I'm looking around, there's other surveys that were saying people are not satisfied with their coverage. So it partly depends on how the questions are phrased. There's examples of things where deductibles have been rising rapidly. So that's one way that the health insurance companies are dealing with this. So this is from a New York Times article in 2015, and it says the steady upward creep in health insurance deductibles has easily outpaced the average increase in a worker's wages over the last 5 years. Kaiser calculates that deductibles have risen more than 6 times faster than workers' earnings since 2010. Okay, so there's various ways that you could technically have coverage and yet you don't feel like, you know, it's not really buying you anything. I mean, it's not just Donald Trump, Bill Clinton. I don't remember his exact words, but if you remember back in the fall, he was on the stump somewhere campaigning for his wife, obviously, and said to the screaming crowds, you know, oh, yeah, this Obamacare, this doesn't make any sense. You're paying more for something. You're not getting any coverage or you're not getting any health care through it. You know, so that's a real phenomenon that he was tapping into there. He understood. He read the tea leaves and realized that the public, you know, is this thing is not working out well. So just more anecdotes, you know, I talk to a lot of people who are in the healthcare sector and yeah, there's a bit of a selection bias. Some of them might know what my views are. And so they know the kind of stuff I want to hear, but I have yet to encounter anybody involved in healthcare, whether we're talking nurses, doctors, people who work on the administrative billing side who said, oh yeah, that now that the Affordable Care Act is in place, my office is so streamlined and everything's great. And I'm really confident about the future of healthcare in this country. Nobody says anything like that. Now, some of them might be supporters of the Affordable Care Act and think, well, we had to do something because these people weren't getting care. And, you know, just because you don't have enough money, that's not fair. But nobody thought this thing was a viable long-term solution. They all thought this is not working by itself. And so they're going to have to intervene massively again to fix this system.
I want to just go in order now of these different charts. The next one follows from this. He says, although Republicans claim that even if the Affordable Care Act brought down the uninsured rate, its enrollees had trouble seeing a doctor. That isn't true. Numerous studies debunk claims that doctors shun Affordable Care Act enrollees. And they say this sample by the Council of Economic Advisers shows that the decline in the uninsured rate is closely associated with a reduction in people who were prevented from seeking and finding medical care because of its cost. And then there's a scatter plot where they plot these things against each other. So is there anything to that?
Well, the problem here, so this one in particular, right, Tom, I wanted to see what the source of this was. Now, I'm not claiming the guy did anything dishonest, but the problem is if you click on the links in this thing to go see where they're getting all this from, this economist, I believe he's an economist who assembled all these charts. Originally, these are coming from his tweets, right? So he was doing this, you know, on his computer or wherever he is, and then was tweeting the stuff out. So I couldn't go and look up the actual calculations to see exactly what lies behind this. But again, I can just come back to and say I've seen plenty of surveys where people are not satisfied and they're saying they can't get access to who they want. I've seen things saying that, you know, part of how health insurance companies are responding to the incentives and the mandates in the Affordable Care Act, it's perverse. But, you know, so the government's saying if somebody with brain cancer comes up to you and says you have to give me a policy and you can't turn the person down, and you can't charge them more than somebody who has similar demographic characteristics, except they don't have brain cancer, well, that's clearly a losing business model. So what do? They'll say, oh, okay, yeah, here's our plans. And they make sure, they ask their actuaries and whoever, they say, who's the best cancer doctor in our region? Make sure that person's out of network for our plans, because we don't want people who have cancer researching and thinking we're the company they want to go with. Make them think, oh, no, our plans aren't good, so they go somewhere else. So there's things like that where, yes, you could see a doctor, you know, because the law mandates it. But the point is, for a lot of people, it's like, oh, yeah, but the one I really want to go to is not in network. OK, so again, I'm just relying on anecdotes here. But, you know, that's with my son. He's got an insurance policy, you know, from a private company, and it's useless. I mean, if we get in a car accident or something, I'm sure that's going to help me at the hospital. But the point is, the deductible is way higher than it was before the Affordable Care Act. I've taken all sorts of, but the pediatrician we wanted to take him to didn't cover it, so I'd pay out of pocket for that. He had a sore throat the other day. I went to one of those, you know, minute clinics out of a Walgreens or something. I get in there, I go to pay, I pull the insurance card out just on a lark, and she said, no, we don't take that. So it's, I think there's plenty of people, and that, again, that underlies what Bill Clinton's whole rhetorical point was there, saying how this system's crazy, you're paying more for something and you don't even get any coverage from it. So yes, that's an exaggeration, and I'm sure there are some people, but the mere fact saying, oh, you can go see some doctor somewhere that your plan covers, that's not the same thing as saying this is actually working out well and people are getting the medical care they really want.
Let's go to the next one then. This one, sometimes we hear libertarian doctors, let's say, saying, oh, the Affordable Care Act has just led to all kinds of problems, and it's making everything so much more expensive. And what we're reading here is that hospitals have actually been major beneficiaries of the Affordable Care Act. Hospitals' uncompensated care costs fell sharply in Medicaid expansion states as patients treated as indigent in the past are now covered by Medicaid. Their uncompensated care costs fell from an average 4% of operating costs to less than 2% now, after the Affordable Care Act. So again, what are we to make of that?
Well, I don't have a problem with this chart per se. Again, I mean, it's like saying, did the compensation of college professors go up when the government started massively subsidizing students?
Right.
You know, and so yeah, that's not shocking. If the government's going to start throwing around billions of dollars, that's going to help some people and hurt other people. I would say though that again, this issue of why were hospitals in trouble? And so I don't want to come off like I'm minimizing how bad the system was, let's say, in 2007. It was a messed up system, and there was a reason that the public was unhappy and that they were looking at Obama as a savior who was going to come in and fix things. And yes, it is true that hospitals were in trouble. People would show up, and they had, by law, they had to treat them. It had to do with the what's called MTALA. That's an acronym from something that was passed in the 80s. And in fact, Mitt Romney, when he did what's dubbed now as Romney Care, when he was governor, he tried to, you know, beef up his libertarian bona fides by writing, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, he wrote an op-ed saying how this is a free market thing we've done because right now the government forces hospitals to treat people, and so people don't have an incentive to get insurance because they know if they get sick, society's going to pick up the tab. And so, you know, this is just encouraging individual responsibility and so forth. And those are conservative right-wing principles, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, with all kinds of stuff with government intervention, it's the Mises classic formula where they keep intervening. It causes unintended consequences. The public doesn't like that. And then the government comes in and does another round. If you just try to roll back one little piece of that, it's going to be untenable. That's kind of the point. And that's partly the logic of why you don't want to let some big new thing in the door, because you're not going to, it's going to be hard to get rid of it. I was going to say, you're not going to be able to get rid of it, but we'll see what happens because, you know, Trump's presidency is kind of an asterisk on normal trends of what happens in politics.
All right, let's go on. Now it starts to get even more interesting. So let's first thank our sponsor. Hey, all you young people, if you're not sure that racking up six figures of debt to spend 4 years in an insane asylum is the best direction for your life, then check out Praxis. I recently sat down with Caitlin Scheel, who's just been accepted into the program. Caitlin, you haven't yet started in the Praxis program, but what's been your experience so far?
I have gotten access to an awesome community and network of people that are following the path that I want to follow and have been able to really learn from all of the advisors and gotten some of the bonus material and access to just the brain of Praxis.
You are 16 years old. You're following a path that's very unusual for a 16-year-old. Why are you following this unusual path? What do you hope to get out of it?
I'm following this path because I've always been much more self-directed, and I think that Praxis allows me to go out and create rather than making me wait to do what I love. And that's the whole Praxis philosophy, is going out and creating and not doing stuff you hate.
Get more details and some free goodies when you check out Praxis at tomwoods.com/praxis. That's P-R-A-X-I-S, tomwoods.com/praxis. All right, the next chart is projected national health expenditures. And the conclusion reached here is overall national health spending has come down even faster than was predicted as a share of GDP. Isn't that good?
Well, here too, Tom, it's a little bit tricky. So I ran this by somebody I know, a health economist, and I don't know if he wants me to mention his name, so I won't. And in this one, he said, well, that's a little bit misleading. He's not saying that the person did this intentionally, but yes, the Affordable Care Act was signed into law in 2010, but a lot of the major provisions were only phased in over time. And so, you know, it's interesting if you look at the actual chart that they're showing here, that national health expenditures, a percent of GDP, was roughly flat up till 2013, and then it started rising again. And for a while there, for several years, it was on, you know, the same trajectory, the same slope that the pre-ACA projections showed. All right. So it's not obvious when you really think through, OK, when did the full meat of the ACA kick in, that it actually slowed the rate of growth all that much. Also, again, without being able to go, I mean, if you look at the footnotes on this chart, Tom, it says, note, pre-ACA projections have been adjusted to reflect a permanent repeal of the SGR following the methodology used by... So the fact that this is just some chart that a guy tweeted out, and I, as far as I could tell, can't go figure out what are the numbers, what is he doing here, I can't say whether or not these projections are fair. For example, what I do know for sure is I've seen people using this trick where... And Krugman would do this a lot, where he would say, oh, and the ACA is coming in under projections of cost. So hip, hip, hooray. And that didn't mean it was actually lowering cost per se. What he meant was, you know, if you look at what the CBO said this thing was going to cost, oh, wait, now it's less than that. So it's not that the thing was, you know, cheap or anything. It's just it wasn't as expensive as people thought it was going to be.
Right.
So there's those issues. What I will say, I don't want to I went to the CMS, you know, that's the government's agency that keeps this kind of data, just looking at health expenditures, a percent of GDP, going back to 1960. And if you plot that chart, it is true that it was flat. You know, it plateaued for a few years there from about 08 to, I'm just eyeballing the thing, about 2013. And then it started rising again. But there are other plateaus throughout that whole period, right? So if you looked at this chart and I just said, hey, when did the government come in and do this massive effort to totally revamp healthcare and to slow the rate of increase, you wouldn't know from looking at the chart. For example, in the 90s, it was flat as well. And presumably that's because the economy was growing, you know, fast there. It was also pretty flat, the growth of this, for a period there in the mid-2000s before it came up again. So I'm just saying, if you look at a chart of this thing, it's not – that you could even tell from the chart where was this great cost-saving measure put into place. It just looks like, yeah, this thing steadily ramps up over time. It's flat. Another measure I was trying to say, okay, well, let's try to get something better. I looked at the growth in real, meaning inflation-adjusted, per capita health expenditures. So there, that does make the ACA come out looking a little bit better. So it's been bouncing around 5% the last few years. And going back to 1960, that is the lowest. However, it's in the mid-90s, it was only like a percentage point higher, the growth, for several years. So it's not like this is some fundamentally new paradigm. And also, you know, there was a bad recession. So the problem, and it's going to – fans of the ACA would think we're cheating by saying this, but, you know, I've seen statistics. I was looking at fuel economy standards and things like that. Like expenditures on automobiles by certain metrics came way down after 2008, 2009. Because Americans were broke and a lot of them lost their job and everyone's terrified about the worst economy since the Great Depression. And so they were switching to cheaper car models to try to save money. Right. So the fact that total spending on healthcare slowed way down right when we went into the worst economy since the Great Depression, by itself, that, you know, it's hard to attribute and say, wait a minute, is it because of this thing over here? Is that what did it? Or is it also partly because people were slowing down their spending on all kinds of stuff? So it's difficult to disentangle these things. What I will say is, again, it's not that the critics are just making stuff up out of thin air. Here's a New York Times piece from October of 2016, so fairly recently. Just remember reminding people of the news. Remember how the Obamacare premiums, right? So the policies issued on the ACA exchanges were rising. So I'm just reading from this. The latest estimate from the federal government is that the average mid-level Obamacare plan, the most popular choice, will cost about 22% more in 2017 than it did in 2016. Okay, so a 22% increase in the premiums of those particular plans, it's just showing you that it's not obvious that actually this plan really is containing costs the way the supporters are saying, that it's, you know, reducing growth in certain sectors perhaps and then moving them over here. And then it's popping up over there, and people for this thing even say, oh, well, but yeah, but as long as you're getting subsidies, what do you care? Well, somebody's paying for that. So it's a lot of these things. You can tell us whatever story you want. There's a lot of statistics to back it up. I'll put it that way.
Would you say something similar for this sixth graph, which is about the argument behind it is the average growth in per enrollee spending by private health plans in key categories has slowed materially since the passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010.
Right. I would say a similar thing that, yes, there are several metrics by which it really does look like spending on healthcare did slow in the past several years. But again, I would just recycle some of those same responses that this also happened during the greatest downturn since the Great Depression. And so it's not obvious how much of that should be given, you know, credit for Obamacare. Another thing is part of why you saw a lull in the jumping up of premiums is that there were several measures in the Affordable Care Act to get health insurance companies to not aggressively raise premiums right when the thing was first phased in. So, for example, there was something called a risk corridor program or a reinsurance program. So the idea was that the federal government was telling health insurance companies, hey, if you go ahead and set your prices for what you want for people who sign up now that we've got the ACA on the books here and you can't turn away people with pre-existing conditions. But don't worry, if it turns out you were way off and you end up losing a bunch of money, you submit those numbers to us and then we will share the loss with you. All right, I'm not going to get into the weeds of the formulas and so on, but that's what these health insurance companies thought. And then when the Republicans gained power and there was the issue with the budget sequester and all that kind of stuff, and in that period, the Congress came back and said, you know what, this program is supposed to be revenue neutral, meaning this reinsurance program. So if all we're going to do is if some of you came in under budget and you owe us money, like you're going to share some of your profits with us, we'll use that to compensate people who underpriced, but we're not kicking in net taxpayer money for this thing. So a lot of health insurance companies were like, oh, and realized that, you know, they needed to really jack up their premiums and that this was not working. And I think that's partly why some of those big companies like United Healthcare and Aetna and so on that you were in the news, how they were pulling out of a lot of the Obamacare exchanges because it just wasn't profitable. So all I'm saying is for some of these particular statistics, which seem to show, oh, the critics were saying premiums were going to blow up. And look at it. You see the first few years after it went into effect and it wasn't, you know, growth that was all that much worse than before. A lot of that is misleading because the act was deliberately designed to phase in the pain and to make it seem really attractive up front.
Well, what about this last one, where the author says, even though employer-based insurance hasn't yet been directly affected by the Affordable Care Act, there seems to be a spillover effect from the overall reduction in healthcare spending growth. Premiums rose by an average 5.6 a year in the 10 years prior to the passage of the Affordable Care Act, but only 3.1% since. So actually, we're griping about nothing. I added that part in.
Well, again, the same thing of part of the issue, too, is and I realize somebody who's a fan and thinks that, oh, no, the government comes in and tries to roll up his sleeves and take care of something. And why would we think that was going to fail? Part of the issue is here. Yes, healthcare expenditures in general were trending up because of demographic shifts. Right. The population was getting older and we're getting newer treatments that didn't exist 20 years ago that can prolong life and so on, but are expensive. And so that, you know, that that's a good thing. You don't want people just to have to die. That's good to have more options. But then that's partly the reason that you see rising healthcare expenditures. And so those trends were unsustainable. You know what I mean? Like, it can't be that healthcare spending as a percent of GDP just keeps rising forever, because eventually the whole economy is just devoted to healthcare, and that doesn't make any sense. Right. So these trends did have to start changing at some point. And it's, you know, so the, it's a little bit awkward to look at the pre thing and then the post and say, oh, again, this is due to this, that private health plans were incorporating some changes to try to contain costs on their own. If you remember, you know, things like HMOs that were famously, what was her name, Helen Hunt, that one movie was swearing about and so on. I mean, so people didn't like that stuff, but private companies were trying to come up with ways to, because they realized we can't just have healthcare expenditures rising like this. So also with this stuff about, you know, the cost or whatever, I'm not, again, without going and looking at the exact statistics, I'm not sure exactly what's going into these numbers, but I would say that there's things about the, you know, deductibles rising and so on, that it's not obvious that this is such a panacea. And also part of the issue here, so I'm, let me just make this point. I don't know if it directly pertains to this particular chart, Tom, but it's difficult because you can see dueling statistics. And I ran into this problem when I was doing the book Primal Prescription with Doug McGuff, where some studies were looking at premiums, you know, before and after Obamacare, and said, oh, look at, you know, it didn't, no huge surge. And other ones were showing humongous increases. And part of the issue was the Affordable Care Act was making you buy a, quote, better policy, like a more comprehensive policy, as opposed to a so-called catastrophic one that had a, you know, just a high deductible and just covered some a few major things, but didn't cover all kinds of ancillary procedures and so on. And so the studies that wanted to downplay the impact were looking at, you know, if you had a similar policy before the Affordable Care Act, how much did that thing's price change? Whereas the studies that wanted to say, no, this is killing average families, were looking at really how much out of pocket did you pay before and now how much are you paying? And those are two different things. So for an analogy, if the government passed a law saying anyone who has a car now has to have a Cadillac or better, and then you looked at, you know, what impact does that new law have on Americans' auto expenditures, well, you can see how that would make everybody's, you know, in general, that would make it go up, because a lot of people right now are driving cars that aren't as fancy as Cadillacs. And so their actual out-of-pocket spending on vehicles would go way up. But if instead you said, well, wait a minute, though, assume before the law you were driving a Cadillac, and now after the law you're still driving a Cadillac, how much did Cadillac prices go up? You know, let's do apples to apples to see how much did this law actually increase car prices. So you can see how those are two different things, and one would make it look like the thing was devastating, and the other one might actually make it look like it went down, right? If more people are buying Cadillacs, maybe there's economies of scale, and now the company makes more Cadillacs, and the per price is lower than otherwise would have been. So there's lots of tricks like that. The one thing, I found a study that tried to control for all that stuff, and it found that in 2014, it was from a Yale economist for the Brookings Institution, so, you know, no ideological axe to grind. And they found, she found that in 2014, the first half of that year, the premiums were 24% higher than you would have predicted, you know, based on pre-existing trends and so on. Okay, so again, I'm not saying I'm directly refuting these particular charts here. I just know that there's a lot of nuances and decisions you can make, and how are you going to model this and frame the issue. And when I went into it, and the people that were trying to really carefully control for things and make it legitimately what the public has in mind when they say, did this thing make premiums go up? They were showing very big increases.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much does it for this article. And what I really want to do is recommend that people check out, because it's more important than ever, your book, The Primal Prescription, because it's a really entertaining book too. And it's not purely economics, although not like that would be a bad selling point for my listeners, but the fact that you have an ER doctor writing it with you gives a great perspective that you and I alone might miss. So I think I'm just going to check and see if I did this. Did I actually put in? Yeah. If you go to tomwoods.com/prescription, it takes you right to the Amazon page and you can grab that baby. You should read it. It's The Primal Prescription, Surviving the Sick Care Sinkhole. It is the best overview of what went wrong with healthcare and what generally we ought to be doing instead. fantastic.
Can I give one example from that book, Tom?
Please do.
People should still buy it, of course, but just a little tidbit. The kind of thing where I would not have picked it up, where but somebody who's, you know, in the trenches, seen it day in and day out. So Doug, so he's the ER doctor, Doug McGuff, he was saying that, yes, the center, you know, the government agencies responsible for reimbursing hospitals and so on, they tweaked their formulas to try to contain costs, because what was happening is that they were, you know, if they were just reimbursing hospitals for certain procedures, if you had a patient come in who had five things wrong with them, they would give the doctors the incentive. They would treat one thing, make the guy go home. They would get paid for that. The guy would come back. Now he's got four things. They would treat that. He'd go home. So that they could keep rebilling and get the maximum amount. And so the government, you know, was aware that this was happening. So they tweaked the formulas such that they were penalizing readmission. So if you treated somebody for something and then he left and then he came back within a certain window, you had to treat that person for free. That was the way that, you know, in other words, the government wouldn't reimburse you for that. And so it was the spirit of it, the intention was to make sure you gave people all the right, correct treatment up front and, you know, didn't let problems linger, that you nipped it in the bud because you weren't going to be able to string them along and just keep getting payments every time they showed up. But Doug was pointing out that he was saying, no, I've seen in practice what that means. It's that some people get discharged and they get sent elsewhere, like to make sure that they don't come back to our hospital, right? Or people would get discharged and they would end up dying. And that was partly why, you know, they weren't coming back to the hospital. So, you know, he's admitting, he's like, I can't go and, you know, give you all kinds of peer-reviewed journal research on this stuff because this is a fairly new thing. And he's just saying, anecdotally, though, I'm seeing what's happening. And it's still the case that, you know, we're discharging people who should not be discharged. And so anyway, it's things like that just to show someone who sees, you know, what was happening before, why it wasn't working, and then how the government tweaked the rules, and how now on paper a lot of fans are pointing to that and saying, see, they're containing costs. This is great. Bounce back rates have dropped in these certain areas. And he's just pointing out, though, yeah, but it's not exactly, you know, what you'd want. It's kind of like in the Soviet Union, if they gave production quotas and say, we want to have more screwdrivers or something come out, and so then they produce really big screwdrivers instead of what the people actually need to use to meet the official quotas. It's perversities like that are happening in the healthcare sector now. So these statistics showing success should not be taken at face value.
All right. And with that, we'll leave it off. Make sure everybody not only grab the book, but visit Bob over at consultingbyrpm.com. He has an excellent blog. I read it faithfully. You'll enjoy it. I'll have links to Bob and all his different projects, including, well, of course, Bob and I do Contra Krugman together. Bob has a podcast he does with somebody else. He's a busy guy. We'll have all that stuff linked at tomwoods.com/824. All right, Bob, I know you're really busy this week, and I appreciate you taking the time to do this for us. I know everybody listening appreciates it. Thanks a lot.
Glad to be here.
Okay, gang, before I let you go, two things. Number one, I have another listener website to tell you about. This one is called fithappens.co, and on fithappens.co, you will find that the creator of the site has lost some weight over the years and is going to teach you how she did that and how she's keeping it off and staying in good physical condition and the kind of food that she eats or used to eat and eats now. It's this kind of a site where you're going to feel better about yourself. You're going to get some good advice. The tagline is fitness, food, faith, family. Very much worth checking out at fithappens.co. I will link to it at tomwoods.com/824, the show notes page for today. Of course, you know by now that you can get a shout out like this, plus my other really great bonuses that'll give you a nice boost for your new blog if you get your hosting through my link. So check out the details at tomwoods.com/publicity. Second thing is that this weekend you should watch for a bonus episode of the show with my old friend Ben Settle coming back for a second appearance. I just love this guy. I don't know what else to tell you. I've learned a ton from this guy. He's awesome. He's great. If you have anything whatsoever to do with business, entrepreneurship, marketing, capitalism in general, Ben Settle is a guy to listen to. He'll just revolutionize the way you think about a lot of things. And he's just done a lot of good for me. I'll just say that. He's done a lot of good. I learn from this guy every single day. and I want to share some of the knowledge he has with you, which I will be doing in bonus episode 825 this weekend. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.